When you're a photographer and generally freelance, you are your business. If you're a one-man band, then you can't have a day off sick. There's just no room for error, you know? So there is a big crossover with your personal and work life, which can be good if you surround yourself with good people and you work with good people, they become your friends.
Hello, I'm Ursy Downs and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries. The aim of Greater Than 11% is to increase diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women.
For episode 68, we are joined by the super versatile and talented photographer, Suzy Lowe. Suzy attained a higher national diploma in photography in her hometown of Edinburgh before migrating quite literally to the other end of the country to do a BA in photography at the renowned Falmouth College of Art. Having built up her portfolio and contacts, in 2005 she helped launch Ion, Scotland's largest lifestyle magazine, becoming their resident photographer. Suzy is the photography force behind Emily Murray's award-winning interior blog, The Pink House, which recently inspired the book Pink House Living. Her interior pictures for the Pink House ooze with that Pinterest perfect sparkle that inspire hundreds of people to try and recreate the look. They're warm yet fashionable, stylish but approachable. Around the same time that Suzy was working for Ion, she began lecturing part-time at Edinburgh College, teaching both digital and analogue photography to students from Foundation to HND. Suzy taught a wide variety of classes ranging from image editing to portraiture and corporate photography. Suzy's work has appeared in many international publications, including Grazia, Condé Nast Traveller, Sunday Times Style, and Homes and Interiors. Understanding the key role of visual storytelling has led Suzy to forge long-term partnerships with many clients. She has worked with many brands to create highly successful and creative campaigns for the likes of Lululemon, Grabbies, and Seafood Scotland. Her creative talent spans many genres of photography, from interiors and lifestyle to editorial, and in each area she brings a unique eye which captures the perfect moment or the elegance of a design. Suzy, it is so fantastic to grab some time to talk to you in beautiful Edinburgh. I'm so looking forward to learning more about your role and your career journey. Welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you for having me. What an intro. Thank you.
So I'm going to dive straight in and ask you if you can tell me a little bit about your photography and who you typically work with.
I think it's all of a similar style, but my clients are quite diverse. I work with some really gorgeous luxury hotels, which is great because that covers everything. It covers sort of pictures of people and portraiture and interiors and food, and just kind of gets me out and gets me traveling. And so I work with the Glen Eagles Hotel, which is a big kind of luxury resort here in Scotland. It's about an hour from Edinburgh and Perthshire. It's gorgeous. I mean, I think it's the best hotel in the UK. It's amazing. So I go up there a few times a month usually, and then I work for quite a few magazines, you know, lifestyle magazines. And then I have some advertising clients that are typically banks. I've got a law firm that I'm about to start a project with. Yeah, so a real range.
Cool. I'm interested. Commercial photography is often projected in the media as a male profession, despite there being heaps of notable female photographers. I'm curious to hear your take or experiences of deciding to focus on photography as a career, and if you faced any barriers, especially early on.
Yeah, there's that that real sort of stereotype of the Austin Powers kind of photographer, you know, that yeah baby kind of attitude, and I'm sure that that existed and probably still does exist to an extent, but mercifully that's changing. There are still very few women working as commercial photographers, especially in Scotland. I think there are a lot more in London and in the south of England, but in Scotland it's still very much jobs for the boys. When I started working in photography, I didn't really think about it. So I don't think it was a barrier. Well, I didn't think of it as a barrier at the time. In hindsight, maybe it was, but I was quite bullish, and I was brought up by pretty strong women who, you know, told you you could do anything. So why wouldn't I? You know, and I was always, maybe I was a bit of a tomboy too. So I wasn't worried about being in a completely male environment anyway. You know, I wasn't very academic at school. I didn't do well at school at all. I loved school. I loved going to I love going to school and seeing my mates and having a laugh, but lessons and academia not so much. But I love photography. I was desperate for a camera. I got my first camera when I was 9. it was, and I was so delighted with it. Took loads of pictures. I made all these albums of all my pictures. I got my little brother to pose for me. My dad had had a little enlarger and a little darkroom set up in the kitchen cupboard when I was younger as well. And that was that probably inspired me, you know, the smell of the chemistry and just the magic of that as well. Like, it just, you know, this magic picture appearing out of the water was just so inspiring. So, yeah, I always wanted to do it. And I didn't know how. I didn't really know it was a job, actually. You know, I think my careers advisor said, you know, you could go and work in a shop or something. That would be a good job for a girl like me, which I didn't really fancy. I left school with very, very few qualifications, and I got a job as a printer. I was an apprentice printer in a lab that printed sort of exhibition prints, and we worked with all professional photographers, all the best photographers in Scotland. So I was seeing all their negatives, I was seeing their process, I was learning about that process, and then I was fixing their shoddy work for them sometimes by cropping and fixing the colour balance on their negatives and stuff too. So I learned loads doing that job. I learned loads about colour and colour balance, exposure, composition, everything, how to be in that industry, how to speak, how to act, what the sort of lingo was, and standards as well, and how to produce a, you know, work that was of a professional standard as well. And it was fascinating. And yeah, they were all men as well. Mm-hmm. All men. Every single person that brought their film was a man, and there was me printing, and everybody I worked with was a man. And printers in those days, this was sort of, you know, early 90s, and it was pretty grotty, and there were pictures of naked women on the walls, and there's lots of pretty grim chat. But I suppose when you're 16, you're a little bit naive, and you just think that's how the world is, you know. I hope the 16-year-old women don't experience that now, and if it was my daughter, I'd be absolutely furious that they were in that situation. But at the time, I definitely didn't. I just thought that was life, and that's, you know, you get on with it, get your wages on a Friday and go to the pub with all the boys, and that was my life. I don't think I saw it as a barrier at the time. I just was like, well, I can do it. You know, anything the boys can do, I can do as well. I did question it a little bit. You know, like, why are there no women in this game? You know, but I don't think you see things as barrier, or I certainly didn't see anything as a barrier at the time. But in hindsight, you look back and go, oh, yeah.
Mm, that's interesting. And nobody ever said anything to you or made you feel like you shouldn't be in that space.
Loads of people did. Really? Oh, I've had loads of funny experiences with people. Quite often I've turned up at jobs and people have said to me, "And what time's the photographer arriving?" That's happened. I can't tell you how many times that's happened. I went to buy some film once, and it was kind of unusual film. I can't remember what I was doing, but it was something kind of unusual, and I was going to do some weird chemistry with it or something like that. And I was in the shop, and the guy that was selling me the film said, "Are you sure that's what he wants, love?" And I thought,
oh, that's so disappointing.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Yeah. And I've even had women, and not even that long ago, women say to me, "Oh, I thought you were going to be a man. Didn't know we got female photographers." You know? The other thing that people often say to me is, "Oh, what do you do?" "Oh, I'm a photographer." "Oh, a wedding photographer. That's a perfectly respectable career, but I'm not a wedding photographer." You know, people wouldn't assume that I'd be.
The assumption is frustrating. Yeah. So you've touched on this a little bit, but can you tell me more about your career journey from where it began up until now?
Started out at the printers, and that was great. It was a brilliant baptism of fire into that industry. Didn't do terribly well at school. I went to college, which was like a sort of technical college, which was brilliant because it was really down to earth. You know, most of the graduates from there went on to be press photographers, a really good education in technical things. And I had one lecturer there who must have seen something in me and said, you must apply for art college. I was like, really? Me? Art college? I would have been quite happy just taking pictures of anything and, you know, okay, I'll apply. But there's no way I'm going to get in. You know, I had hardly any academic qualifications. And I applied to Falmouth, Bournemouth, Brighton and Blackpool. I think they were all the best places for photography at the time. And I really wanted to go to Falmouth because why would you not want to live in Cornwall? And, you know, surfers and things. And I got in there. They offered me the final year, which I couldn't believe, and I just didn't feel confident enough in my ability to write a dissertation and things. So I went into the second year and I did 2 years there. I'm really glad I did. When I graduated, I moved to London and I spent a couple of years working there. I moved back up to Edinburgh about 15 years ago and just started working freelance up here. Mm. So it was good to be back, and it was great to, you know, connect with lots of people that I'd known for years. And so that definitely helped. And it has been a very slow process, you know, and I've got a 13-year-old son. So when he was very young, I did a bit of teaching because being freelance is so difficult to well, know where your next meal's coming from, especially in the early days. And that was great. And actually teaching was brilliant because I learned a lot. It really kind of solidified a lot of my skills as well, which was great. You know, more recently, I worked at ION. They were launching the magazine when I first moved back to Scotland, which was a brilliant coincidence. And we just worked together a lot. And that was great for me as well, because I was out and I was meeting people and, you know, I'd go and shoot somebody for the magazine. And then they'd say, well, actually, we need marketing pictures. Can you help us out? So that really helped to grow the business as well. ION was a really brilliant platform for me to launch things.
I'm so intrigued by your decision to go back to education from a different perspective, to going back to teaching from not being academic at school.
Yeah, I never thought of that, actually. That's a really good question. I mean, I totally believe in education. I didn't have a great experience with school. Going to lessons wasn't for me. But again, in hindsight, I realised what the problem was. When I was at Falmouth, I was at art college, and somebody suggested to me that I might be dyslexic. And I was like, nah, no way. And you know, you have all these misconceptions that that just means you're stupid or whatever. And I had been told an awful lot at school that, you know, you're lazy, you're stupid, you're never going to do anything with your life, and all of these kind of terrible things that hopefully people don't say to children anymore. But in the 1980s and 90s, they definitely did. And, you know, I think they knew I was reasonably bright, but they thought I just couldn't be bothered. I was just a little shit. Which probably was a little shit as well. But so I went and did the test, all like, no way, I'm not dyslexic. And you sit, I don't know if you know anything about the test, but you sit there sort of all day with this person who assesses you. And at the end of it, you just laughed and said, you're absolutely textbook. And everything, getting that diagnosis, I think everything really made sense. So going back to teaching, I think I was quite kind of understanding. I could see that people came from different things, that you couldn't fit a square peg into a round hole. People learn in different ways, and I really enjoyed that experience. I think it's such a shame that teaching is so underfunded and undervalued. It takes a lot of good people out of that career, and it was difficult for me because I really, really enjoyed it, but I found it quite draining. And I was also freelance. I was doing, you know, a few hours or a couple of days a week teaching, and then trying to juggle freelance things and also be a parent, and you can't do all of those things at once and give everything 100%. I think you've got to pick your battles.
Yeah, I totally understand that. You work with a range of clients: lifestyle, interior, designer, editorial. Is there a shifting of gears both in your thinking and approach depending on what you're working on?
Yes, I think there probably is. I try to be adaptable and versatile for, you know, the kind of project that I'm working on. And sometimes I'll just be working by myself. I just start talking to myself and muttering, and or it'll just be me and a client or a couple of people. And then other times, if I'm working on an advertising shoot or a fashion thing or something, there can be a cast of thousands. You know, it'll be like Spartacus. There'll be you know, assistants and hair and makeup and stylists and everything else. And I love that as well. I really enjoy that. So yeah, it's a really different way of working. And that's, I think, actually teaching probably helped with that as well, as just being able to sort of remain confident in a room full of people, make sure you bring the best out in everybody as well. Yeah.
No, that's interesting. I wonder how different it is standing up in front of a class of people versus being on set with lots of different people.
Yeah, it's pretty similar, I suppose. I hadn't really thought about it before, but yeah, it is similar. I think, you know, you have to be confident in your decisions and your answers in front of people, which is the same with teaching. And yeah, just bringing out the best in people, I think, is the similarity. You know, I've got a little crew of people that I work with really, really regularly, and it's great. They're all brilliant. They're all women, actually, as well, which is really interesting and quite unusual, I think, to have a fully female crew of, you know, I've got art department, stylists, hair, makeup, and my assistant as well as a woman, and they're all brilliant, and we have a laugh, but I can rely on them to do a really good job. And I think the more we work together, it's a bit like teaching. It's, you know, working on what everybody needs to do their job well, and yeah, just bringing out the best in them, and so that we all achieve something that we're proud of.
Definitely, across the board, kind of adapting between sort of lifestyle to your more corporate work, being all in it together as a team.
Yeah.
How do you respond to or break down a brief when you receive one?
That's a great question. Not all briefs are created equally, that's for sure. So some briefs are brilliant, and they're very clear and they're very concise, but some people just, you know, want some pictures. They don't really know what they want. But with each brief, I think you need to, you know, even with a very, very strict and clear brief, sometimes you do need to, you always need to ask a lot of questions. and you always need to check that, you know, every single element of it and how it's going to be used. That's really the really important thing, is to find out how an image will be used, you know. And surprising how many times people haven't thought that through, like the size of the image and the aspect ratio and all that kind of thing. You really have to draw that out of people and push it a little bit too to make it the best that it possibly can be. So with a really detailed brief, that's usually pretty good. With one that's pretty vague, then there's a lot of questions, and you have to be clear that people know what they're going to get as well. You know, it's about managing people's expectations sometimes. And sometimes you get a brief that you think this is going to look awful, and so you have to be quite diplomatic and say, well, yes, we could do that, but what about if we did this as well? Have you thought about maybe we did it this way? You know, because at the end of the day, people are hiring you because you're the expert. You just don't want to piss on their parade and tell them that their ideas are terrible. So there's a fine balance with that.
Could you tell me a little bit more about the Pink House project and its progression?
My friend Emily Murray is a journalist by trade, and she'd worked in lots of sort of lifestyle women's magazines and things previously. And she's set up a blog, an interiors blog. She's a great writer, so our skills really complemented each other, and it just kind of naturally evolved from Instagram. And it started out really small, and I think she's got something like 70,000 followers on Instagram now. And Emily has moved twice through the process. So I've photographed two of Emily's houses, but then we've also found some interesting people with interesting houses that we like, and photographed them, and lots of hotels and places like that too along the way. So the blog has evolved over the last 4 years, and last year we published a book, which was really good fun, and we were able to have quite a lot of creative control over that and how it looked, so we're really proud of that.
Amazing. Oh, I'd love to see that. And your passion projects, could you talk a little bit about those for us?
There are a couple of projects that I would love to have more time to work on. I've been working on a little project, and I'd love to do a book on food and Scottish food producers. And, you know, all these small independent makers who've been doing this sort of traditional thing for years and years and, you know, generations. So I have photographed, you know, a guy who forages for mushrooms, and there's a woman in Fife, and it's the oldest last remaining sort of traditional dairy. And she makes butter by hand with these little paddles on her kitchen table. That kind of thing. I love that because you get these lovely still life images of the produce, and then lovely portraits and that interaction. And I'm so nosy. I love finding out people's stories. So that's great for me. And actually next week, I'm going with the exec chef at Glen Eagles too. We're going out on a fishing boat, which will be brilliant because I'll get all that story as well. And I love that. And I've done a few jobs on fishing boats, and that's really fun. And then the other thing that I really enjoy doing, and I have some images with an image library called Millennium at the moment, but I've had a few exhibitions, is I really like cities at night. They're like stage sets, you know, everything's illuminated and it looks beautiful and it's a bit more dramatic. And so it's got that kind of filmic quality. You know, I've done a couple of landscape and then more recently kind of portrait projects at night, and I'd like to continue doing that.
Brilliant. And I know you work between kind of digital and analog, and I wonder what it is you reach for when you're working on those passion projects. Does it really depend kind of the subject on what you're photographing, or do you have phases of being in love with one more than the other?
No, I almost never shoot film anymore. There's nothing you can't do with digital photography, you know. And I also think from an environmental point of view, it's not a great idea to chuck all that silver down the sink. So I almost exclusively shoot digital. Last time I shot any film was a couple of years ago, and similar to the food project, I did some portraits of people who make things by hand. So I photographed a silversmith, a tailor, the last tailor in Glasgow, a gunsmith, people like that. And I shot that on film because I really wanted to do the whole process of, you know, processing the film myself, printing it on really beautiful fibre paper. But I'm not sure I'll do it again, actually.
Fair enough. Photographers are typically freelance. What is your strategy for building up a client base to ensure you have a regular income?
Well, I'm certainly more strategic now, but I don't think I ever had a strategy in the beginning. I think I just thought I was getting away with it. I think a lot of people have that, and maybe that's, you know, talk a lot about imposter syndrome, but that kind of, every job I did, I thought it was going to be my last. So I didn't really have a strategy. I mean, I must have, but, you know, I think I'm naturally good at making connections and things, and that certainly helped to build up my client base. And you know, working at IELTS magazine was great because I was meeting a lot of people. And I probably only did a few days a month for them when I was working for them. It was just great to get out and meet people and build it up that way. Teaching was really helpful because I always knew I had an amount of money every month to cover my bills and things. But there were a lot of years of, you know, flying by the seat of my pants and just crossing all my fingers that I would get more work every month. Unfortunately, I'm really, really busy now, so you always have that at the back of your mind. So I am much more strategic now, and I just try to maintain relationships. And I think just, you know, just keep giving a good service and hope that people keep coming back to you. Most of my business is word of mouth and repeat business, so I think hopefully that's working.
Well, it certainly looks like it is. Can you give us an overview of your typical working week?
Not really, it's so varied. I try to give myself a bit of a break so that I'm not shooting every single day, but it doesn't always work out like that. I would probably shoot on average 3 days a week, and then a couple of days editing. When I'm really, really busy, I just work all the time, and I'll be editing at the weekend and sorting out call sheets for a job the next day and answering the phone. And yeah, so it's a bit of everything. And as things have got busier, we've been doing a little bit more production work as well. It's great to be able to delegate a little bit. So I'm at that kind of point where I'm able to trust people a little bit more to do things too. The work-life balance needs a bit of work, but I try and, you know, spend as much time with my son as I can at the weekends, and that usually involves just watching him play sports and driving him places, but that's quite nice to do that.
Yeah, that sounds great. So you mentioned editing and call sheets and production. Can you tell us a little bit about those elements and how they all kind of come together?
Yeah, I mean, I think people do have this assumption you just turn up and press a button and that's it. You take a picture and it's done, and that's all very easy and very glamorous, and then you swan off. But it really depends on the shoot. But there's always an element of planning and chatting to the client. And it may be, if it's, you know, I might be working with an interior designer, and if that's the case, just have a bit of a chat with them. I'll go and I might go and do a recce beforehand and have a little look at the location. And then I'll probably just turn, it's fairly straightforward. I'll turn up and I'll spend a day photographing. And then probably for every day I shoot like that, I would spend a day editing. And it's just, you know, the files are large. Even just opening a file takes, you know, a bit of time. Check everything, you know, have a little bit of a tweak, save it and that kind of thing. So it's an advertising shoot and there's a bigger budget, so we would spend a bit of time casting models, putting together mood boards for wardrobe, for the set, for the location, for hair and makeup, all of that kind of thing. Once all that was decided and cleared by the client, we would put together a call sheet, which would be, you know, a rundown of how the day is going to go, who's going to be there, everybody's details. And then we'll turn up on the shoot, do it all, make sure everybody's fed and watered. That's a big part of the job, is feeding people. People like to turn up at a photo shoot and have a good lunch, I've noticed. I never sit down, I'm jumping around and whatnot, but people turn up to watch and eat lunch. And models need to feed a lot as well, they're hungry. So we do the shoot, I'd probably sit and look through images with the client, and then there'd be a lot of toing and froing with the retouching as well, depending on what it is. At the moment, I've just finished a 4-day shoot for it's been really exciting actually, it's been a new visual identity for a bank. Mm. And so they're kind of working through some ideas as well, so there's been a lot of involvement with them and their art directors working out, you know, the best way to go, even down to the sort of brand colours that we use within the images and things. So that's been really interesting and quite a big job for me.
Mm, I've seen your work with the bank actually, it looks brilliant. Oh, it looks beautiful.
Thank you.
What skills do you need to become a commercial photographer?
I think the most important skill is to be able to get along with people. I think you need to be able to kind of read a room and read a person and know how they're going to respond and then act appropriately. I think you need to be really passionate about it. I think you really need to want to do a good job and really enjoy it, because it's hard work, you know. It isn't turning up and pressing a button. You've got to really want to do it, and you've got to really want to do a good job. You've got to be able to follow a brief. You've got to be able to give them what they want. I think tenacity is probably the best word I can use to describe it. You know, you've got to think on your feet a lot.
Mm. There's that element of kind of time pressure as well, after you've done all that planning and you're in the room. It's like you're in the moment now. You have to kind of get exactly everything that you've been planning and prepping for.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, the preparation is so important. and an organisation. And if I'm honest, the sort of organisational skills in most of my life, it doesn't come naturally to me. But when I'm working, I am very, you know, things have to be a certain way and I have to otherwise it's not going to work.
Yeah, and totally relate to organisation not coming naturally to you in your personal life, but in your work life, it being quite different.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
It is funny. What is one of the biggest challenges you've faced in your career?
I guess when you're a photographer and generally freelance, you know, you are your business. So if you have challenges in your personal life, you have to kind of, well, just cover them up generally, or, you know, just get on with it. You know, if you're a one-man band, then you can't have a day off sick, and, you know, you can't, there's just no room for error, you know. So there is a big crossover with your personal and work life, which can be good, because you tend to, if you surround yourself with good people and you work with good people, they become your friends, and there is that crossover. I think you just have to accept that you don't have a job where you go in and do your work and go home at night, and they're very separate. So that can be a challenge, I think. And on that, I think having children can definitely be difficult when you're freelance and when you're a photographer. It's a lot of early starts, there's a lot of late nights, there's absolutely no way you can cancel a job. So if your kid's sick, you know, what are you going to do? And I've been very, very lucky. I've had great family support and great friends and things. But that can certainly be a challenge. And I think that may be part of the reason why a lot of women, when they have children, just don't find it a feasible career to continue with.
That sounds tough.
Yeah, because, I mean, the reality is it's still traditionally women that will take on that role of childcare and will be the one that stays at home when their child's not well. My son's 13 now, and he's fairly self-sufficient, but he still needs me around, and his father and I split up when he was one, so that was definitely a challenge, having a toddler and a freelance career.
Wow. What do you love about being a photographer?
Oh, I love it. I love it all. I really love being a photographer. I love all the amazing opportunities I've been given to go places and meet people. I just love people and their stories. And even when I'm not photographing them, you know, it could just be a client that I spend the day photographing a building with, or, you know, something. I just love their stories. I'm definitely a big keeper of secrets, which is great, you know. I think people tell all the secrets to their hairdresser. I think it's a little bit the same with photography, because it can be quite an intimate experience. You know, you're looking at somebody and photographing them and things. So people, my friend Mary Gordon, who's a brilliant makeup artist, she and I work together quite a lot. She's that first line of getting people's secrets as well. She's brilliant at it. She's, you know, sits them down and looks at their face and, right, and what have you been doing? And by the end of, you know, them having their hair and makeup done, she knows everything about them, and the fact that their mum's not well and that their cat's going to the vet and, you know, whatever it is, and that they're having an affair with their boss and whatever. It's great. I love that. So, yeah, the best thing about being a photographer is the variety and the ability to, yeah, just go out and meet people. I've had so many experiences in my life that I definitely wouldn't have had I not been a photographer.
I'm definitely one for a bit of gossip, so I love that.
Yeah, I love a gossip.
What advice would you give to somebody who is aspiring to work in commercial photography?
It's, you know, a bit of a cliche, but really just work hard and be nice to people is the best advice I can give. Be helpful, be adaptable, be friendly, be open to things, be kind, and really decide if you really want it as well, because it's a hard job too. You've got to love it.
For sure. You kind of have to put your all into it.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. You definitely do.
How do you fuel your creativity? What do you do, or where do you go?
I think everything. You just suck it all up, don't you? I think everything is inspiring, and I love music, actually. Listening to music definitely helps. Travelling helps. I love sitting in a car or on a train and looking out the window, because that's the big frame on the world anyway. So that's really nice. And actually, more recently, I've got into running, which is weird. That helps as well. Just a bit of, you know, blood flowing around your body and being outdoors and nature and things. Mm. I must be getting old. I love everything. I love films. I love art. I love anything. I think there's inspiration in everything.
What kind of music do you listen to when you're on set? Are you allowed to have music? Do you play?
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, I have to have music on if I can. Whenever I can, I think I start to go a bit bonkers if there's no music on. So, but it depends. We need to keep everybody happy. So it really depends on the shoot and the mood and who the client is. So try and let somebody else have responsibility for deciding.
But it's nice to have on.
Yeah, it's nice to have on, definitely, definitely. And when I'm travelling as well, I listen to a lot of music and podcasts as well, which has been really good.
What have you got coming up in the next few weeks or months?
Tomorrow I am going to shoot some billboard outdoor ads for Ulster Bank. So they'll be out later in the month across Northern Ireland. And I've got a couple of other shoots for some other banks coming up as well, which is really fun, actually. It's nice to work with a big crew of people and stuff. And I'll be going out in a fishing boat next week as well. We're going down to the west coast of Scotland, and I think we're going lobster fishing. So that'll be interesting too. And then that should probably all keep me busy for the next couple of weeks.
So before you go, I wondered, is there a career or job in the creative industries that you've always been curious about, and why?
I love film and I do shoot a little bit of video, but I would like to know more about directing film. I have directed a few small adverts, but I would like to learn a lot more about directing film, or, you know, short films, or maybe sort of bigger budget ads where I could have a bigger crew, and that'd be fun.
Mm. And for our final question, is there a woman in the creative industries that you would love to hear on Greater Than 11%?
Well, all of my crew who I work with in our little production company collective are all really fascinating and all do brilliant jobs. So I think they would all be brilliant to interview. Emily Smoor, who does art department, is brilliant. She's absolutely tenacious. She just smiles and gets on with it, and, you know, really handy with a drill, can build you anything you want and can find you anything you want as well. If you need a purple elephant, she'll find you a purple elephant. She'd be a great person to speak to. Mary Gordon, brilliant makeup artist, who is, yeah, keeper of secrets. She's like Mother Hen on set. She's very interesting too. And Katie Connolly, stylist, she's absolutely brilliant. And again, like Emily, is able to find you anything you want. If you need a, you know, Joseph's Technicolor dream coat, she'll find it for you. And also my amazing assistant, Jess Sharp, is a great photographer in her own right. She's like the opposite of me in that she's great at keeping me kind of grounded and doing all the admin things that I would rather, you know, poke my own eyes out than do. She's got really good insight into it because she watches everything that goes on. So yeah, all my crew, they're all brilliant and fascinating.
They all sound amazing. We'll definitely have to get those details off you.
Yes, definitely.
So we've kind of come to the end of the podcast now. Thank you so much for coming on today and speaking to us. It's been really interesting hearing about your career and everything that you've done.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases.